not speaker. I'll just stay out of line, and when I start reminiscing, it's hard for me not to get emotional, because this was a very real, real time to me. I never knew my grandpa. My grandpa died in November, and I was born in December. So I never knew my grandpa. But I know my father, and I know what a life he lived, and what a care and concern, genuine, for people. And I'm thankful for that. But mom and dad were married when they were young. Dad was only 18, mom was only 16. And, of course, the Wilsons lived on Channel Street in Newark. They had moved from Rocky Fork. They had lived out there at Rocky Fork for many years. And they had moved to town. They lived on Channel Street. And my mom actually lived down in Crooksville, which is an hour away probably from here. And she was a coal miner's daughter. And my uncle and aunt lived just a little ways over from the Wilsons, so she had come there to help take care of their kids, and that's how my mom and dad met. And down through the years, I can't believe that God just, he put them together, because mom was ever right there beside daddy every move he made. She went on sick calls, he went on sick calls, she went on sick calls, whatever he would send her, people would call and say their kids were hungry or they needed some groceries. Mom got the groceries together, took to the people. Somebody called and they were sick and they couldn't clean their house. Mom went, she cleaned the house. Their kids needed babysitting for some reason. She babysit the kids. Our home was such that it was all open door policy. That's the way we lived. Dad was on call 24 hours a day. It was our life. That's the way from little all the way till I got married. That's the way it was. You never know if somebody was going to come to the door at supper time. If they did and they needed to eat, they ate with us. You never knew if you woke up in the night, you might hear daddy out in the living room praying with someone because they needed help. And whenever they needed help, he was available. That's just the type of person he was. And maybe they'd go on a sick call and they'd come home and maybe both of them would just get their clothes changed to try to get something around the house. Phone would ring. Another sick call. Change clothes again and out the door they went. And that's the way that we were raised. We were raised that you really cared. It was a genuine care for people and concern. And you wanted to help everybody because everybody needed help. And you never knew what somebody maybe was really going through, because not everybody will tell you. There are some people that pretty much tell you anything that's happening, but then there's other people that's more backward. And you've got to be able to have the Holy Spirit read into and see down in that person's eyes or in their heart to see if they're crushed. And I remember Daddy, he always, when he got done preaching, he always went back to the door and took hands with the people, and that way I think he kept a contact where he could maybe pick up if somebody was going down or struggling or needed a little bit extra attention or whatever there was there that they really needed, that he would pick up on that and could be able to help them. But that was as we were growing up, and of course, like I said, our house was always open. We had different people come actually at different times and actually live with us, actually live there in the house with us. We'd make room because they needed help, and Dad was available to help them. Of course, like I said, Grandpa died in November, and I was born in December. Well, it wasn't too long after that that Daddy felt the call and became the pastor. And of course, I was the third child. Of course, we still lived with Grandpa and Grandma. Dad and Mom lived with Grandpa and Grandma until we moved over in 1957 to that house. They moved over there. Other than the years that he was gone in the service, him and Mom was gone in the service. And I was just a few months old, and I got sick, and I had pneumonia really bad. And and they was telling me that, and this was when my grandma was still alive, and they were feeding me with an eyedropper because I was so bad off, and Daddy had went to pray for Brother Fry at the hospital, and the devil had said, well, you going to pray for this man, and you got a little daughter back there sick, you can't even get help to. And he came back home, and he said, Grandma had told him, she said, Emerson, maybe, you know, she knew that he was a young minister, and she didn't want to have anything where it'd be a reproach in any way to the church or anything. And she said, maybe you better get a hold of a doctor and have him check, Susan. So they said he went outside, and he prayed, and he was out there praying, and he came back in, and he was whistling, I'll just hold on to Jesus. And they said, my grandma said, he's not going to get no doctor. So from that time on, I started getting better. And then down through my life, I can remember like different instances like that that's happened, because I remember Sister Beezer was in the hospital, and Daddy had went and prayed for her. And the Lord had told him or whatever to go back and pray again. And he went back, and Sister Beezer was healed. And Brother Gordon, that sits out on the pulpit, he was real bad off. And one night, Dad went in revivals. Daddy held a lot of revivals. When we were young, he was gone a lot in revivals because there was different churches that maybe weren't too far from here that he could get to. And he would hold revivals there, maybe even a couple hours away. And he went one night on his way and prayed for Brother Gordon, and the Lord miraculously healed Brother Gordon. They said he jumped right up out of the bed, you know. But he was completely surrendered to God in such a way that it was an open communion, like all the time. I mean, we could be sitting in the front room, and maybe we're all having a good time, but that didn't mean he was sitting there actually with us, because he's sometimes over there praying, God help us, or he was communing with God while we were all, you know, having our own thing in the front room. He was out in communion with God right there with us. But I'm not saying that he didn't have good times, because he did. Dad liked to cut up, and in fact, before he was to be a preacher, he wanted to be a clown. And he liked to cut up, and he would laugh and have a good time, but he just was fully surrendered. He just had a way about him that you just knew that the communication was there all the time, that you could just feel it. And on Wednesdays, pretty much his whole day was spent in the study. He spent the day in there and prepared for church on Wednesday night. And then Saturday would come, and pretty much all day Saturday he spent in there preparing for the services. And then he would sometimes he'd be so tired, he'd come out on Saturday night and he'd say, I can't study no more. Or my eyes just won't, you know, they aren't focusing right. I've just got to go to bed. So he would go to bed, and he'd get up early again on Sunday morning and prepare again. Which sometimes, when you're young, like all you guys, that's really hard to understand. But as I'm getting older, I understand. Sometimes your eyes just don't, especially if you use them very much, they don't focus like they used to. And believe it or not, I was a young person once, just like you guys. Only we didn't have young peoples in this room. We had young peoples in the choir room. And we sang some of the same songs you guys sang. And did things a lot like you did. We went pretty much every Sunday we had visitation. And we went, the bus would meet out here about 2 o'clock. And we'd come get on the bus. And we went to one rest home or another. There were several different ones. And we'd sing in the hallways. Somebody would read a scripture, and that's pretty much how our Sunday afternoons were spent. And then we got so, as we were probably maybe 15 years old, Belva Linger Fox, Brother Sherm was our leader, and she got where we would start going to maybe a shut-ins on Friday night. We'd take and gather together, and we'd drive those times, and we'd go to a shut-ins. And then a lot of times we went to different people's house after that and just had fellowship, and they fixed something to eat for us, and it was just a time of the kids getting together, and everybody enjoyed that. So, and getting back, and then to Daddy starting out, he He did try to go to college. He went out west to try to go to college, and I think he was out there 1 or 2 days, and he called his dad and he said, "I'm coming home." He knew that that wasn't what he needed, that, you know, on his knees, it was where he was going to get what he needed. And he did. He got it. So, and then growing up, down on 6th Street, of course, I remember in the basement, we started out in the little room off where you'd had, there were some steps that went up, and that's where you started out Sunday school. And then you'd go out in the main area, there was Sunday school rooms off of it. And then we went upstairs sometimes. Some of us went upstairs. I don't remember what age group. That was up by the balcony. And then they bought the building next door, and that had what they called it the annex. And they had Sunday school rooms upstairs in that. And of course, we had junior church downstairs on Sunday night in that. And I remember where we used to have building fun Sunday once a month. And they had a little church, which looked like the big church, but it was just a little church. And everybody would go up around there, and you'd either put in the stamps or you put in money. It was called the building fund. And of course, then I remember when we built this building, and of course they had to get a loan, which didn't happen very long they had a loan, but they did. And the Lord provided, and they paid it off. But I remember some of the special offerings, they used Kentucky Fried Chicken buckets, because the offering plates weren't big enough to hold. So they had went and got the Kentucky Fried Chicken buckets and used those to gather the offerings in. But the Lord supplied and he blessed. And they was able to put, you know, the building, pay it off early. But I remember when we were still at 6th Street, how that we grew. And it got where there was chairs set out and there still wasn't enough room. It got to the place people were having to sit in the basement. Of course, you couldn't see what was going on down there. You could hear, but you couldn't see what was going on. But then on warmer weather, once the weather got warm, we came out to the tabernacle, and we would have Wednesday nights and Sunday nights out here, but we still had church in there on Sunday mornings. But we didn't have air conditioning, and it was warm. We didn't have air conditioning in our house. And we had a lot of people in our house, because every time we had a revival, a camp meeting, whatever, the preacher stayed at our house. And you know, it was him, or whether it was him and his wife, or whether it was him and his kids, or whatever. We made room. And we're talking about pretty much a one-bathroom house. So, I mean, people nowadays think, oh, man, you know, you can't do that. You got to have 2 bathrooms. Well, we had 1 bathroom. We had a little tiny, like a commode and a sink in Daddy's study. Other than that, we had 1 bathroom. So we just had to know, you had to get in there and get out because we had to allow time because we had all these people in the house. But you know what? When you're raised that way, you learn to do it. It was just a, you know, something that we learned, and we got along okay with that, you know. And then talk a little bit about Bible school. Bible school was a big thing back then. We had probably 600 kids, probably. And it wasn't a matter of just getting everything, you know, okay, we're having Bible school. It was making crafts maybe months ahead of time. They would do plaster crafts and try to get made up enough where they had them ahead of time. It was getting people pre-registered so Carl and BC could figure out a bus route, because they ran about 4 buses. And they were packed. The buses were packed. And so Carl and BC would, I can remember going with them, trying to find addresses so you knew what bus to put the kid, you know, the kids on. And it was a lot of work. It was, okay, like you have the rooms up there. They had beds in them. The beds had to be taken out. You had to put tables and chairs in there to prepare for Bible school. Then as soon as Bible school was over, you had to take the tables and chairs back out and get the beds back in for camp meeting. So it was a lot of work to prepare, but you know what? There's people still today that you'll see that remember coming to Bible school. It made a big impression on kids. And of course we did, you know, Sister Frances Wilson led singing, and she always had her song chart, and we always learned a lot of songs, which you know, I find I have listened to so many songs in my life. I think I could probably come up with a song for anything because it seems like it just comes into my head. But I just, I've just heard them over and over for so many years, and it's great. And one song in particular that I do remember, though, was We've Got a Great Big Wonderful God, and I do remember that song. And I think that another one might have been God's Love is Like a Circle, you know, but they're just songs that made an impression, you know. And then, of course, on Saturday of the, they would have Bible School all week, and on Saturday, and I think if I remember right, we had Bible School in the mornings. We had it in the mornings, and then on Saturday we had a picnic. And of course, they would bring ponies over, and they'd have pony rides. Their dad usually had a cart, and they'd have a cart hooked up to some ponies, and they'd take that and take kids' rides on that. And they had a little train that they would get some time to come where the kids could ride in it, and it went around a track. And of course, they had different games that they could play, and then they had a picnic lunch. Then on Sunday, they would have the program on Sunday night where the kids took part and sang their songs. And a lot of the parents would come out to that program. And, of course, that was an opportunity for them to even hear, you know, the gospel. So it was, you know, it was something that, like I said, you see people today that remember, you know, as they were kids coming to camp meeting or coming to Bible school. And then we, of course, then we would take the beds out or put the beds back in and get ready for camp meeting. Well, back when, years ago, we had camp meeting 10 days. We have a week. We started on a Friday, and we went from that Friday the whole next week we went through camp meeting. And we had three services a day. And pretty much when you worked in the dining hall or the lunch stand or wherever, but especially in the dining hall, you worked all day. You went there, I think it started at 6. I think they had the workers eat 6 to 7. So you went there at 6 o'clock in the morning, and you may have got out a little bit of time between that morning service. And of course, then you ran right into the lunch, right into supper. Well, supper was 5 to 6. And the lions would come, and I don't know how, but up at the print shops where the dining hall used to be. And they would go along the side of the building and back up to that driveway that goes down through there. That's how long the lines would be. And of course, it didn't have air conditioning. They had big fans on a stand at the back door that they'd have blowing. And you pretty much had to eat and get out of there because there wasn't enough room for you to sit around and talk very long because it was busy, you know. And I can remember, too, you didn't have the conveniences we have today, we'll put it that way. You had to, they had to have the doors open for people to get in and out. And of course, you have doors open, you have flies. And I can remember in the evening after supper and everybody got out of there, and it'd be about time to go to church. I can remember Carl going in there, and he had this machine, and it was like a fogger type thing. And he'd go in there and fog that dining hall to kill all the bugs. So, you know, to be ready, the flies and stuff. The dish room was that little room that comes off the side of the building over there. So you can imagine having a dish room to take care of that many people in that little area and have enough people in there to try to get everything clean. And working conditions weren't great. But you know what? It was well worth it because the services, there was much, much rejoicing. There was shouting. I would love for you guys to be able to just sit through one service that we used to have in the old barn. I mean, people were jumping up, shouting. There was they were just praising the Lord. It was genuine praise. It wasn't a bunch of emotion. They were genuine praising God from their heart. And then I remember then we started having winter camp meeting, and that was still when we was down at the old church. And so we didn't have much room for that. Of course, at the time, they didn't have heat in the dorms. So they put beds in the Sunday school rooms here. I remember they run a bus back and forth from the old church out here to get people back and forth sometimes. And then, of course, after following winter camp meeting, a lot of times we went right into revival. And revival might be 3 weeks. It might be 6 weeks. We didn't know how long revival was going to be. But you know what? You went expecting, and you know what? Pretty much every night you got something. There was something there. There, you know, it wasn't just we were just having revival. Right. It was, we was able to feel something. And then, of course, then this building was built, and I was in probably junior high school when this building was built, and I can remember them working on the building, and I can remember when the main auditorium out here was dirt, and there was a house sitting about right out there, sort of went down in, and there was a house, and upstairs they used for people to stay in at camp meetings, and the Wellses lived, I think, last in that house. I think they might have lived there even, I don't know if they remember what Brother Wells worked on this building or not. They might have had it tore down then, but anyhow, they had lived in there. But it was pretty much every night, of course, unless there was church, we come home, changed our clothes, we came to God's Acres because we were working on this. And then I remember right up to the time they worked on the building, the winter camp meeting, they didn't have it quite ready, and I think some people might have even worked maybe all night to try to get it ready to have at least be able to use it for winter camp meeting. And of course then they didn't dedicate it till the June camp meeting, but you know, I can, it was several weeks and months worth of work, but people were very willing to work. Remember a lot of times they came straight from their other job here, and of course Brother Richie and my mom and different ones would have food fixed, so when they came here they had their supper, and that, you know, that kept the men where they could come straight here from work and they could maybe get more done. And and I remember growing up our days and months or whatever, we'd have camp meeting here. Of course, when we had Bible school, we had Bible school. We got out of school, we had Bible school, we had camp meeting. And then we'd go to camp meeting. We'd go to Moore, Oklahoma camp meeting. We'd go to Stuartsville, Alabama camp meeting. We'd go to Coffeyville, Kansas camp meeting. And then, of course, it was back here to camp meeting again. That's pretty much how our summers went growing up as kids. We spent a lot of time in the camper. But it didn't hurt us. It didn't hurt us a bit. So, and I remember one Sunday, summer, Dad even had a tent meeting in Arkansas we went to, and he held that, and then we went on to Coffeyville. But, you know, it's a treasure that us kids have, because when the, you know, the ministers come, and they stayed in our home, and of course we got to know them, and we would be able to joke around with them a little bit, and we enjoyed having them. And of course, I had four brothers and a sister, and my brothers were ornery. And I can remember one of the first times or so Brother Brooks came. Of course, he was, when he first came, that was probably back, oh, I don't even know. I mean, it was a long time ago. And he didn't like, pretty much he was afraid to eat anything here. He liked Kentucky Fried Chicken, but that's about it. And I remember Dad was taking him to North Carolina, and of course, we, back then, in the South, dark people didn't get to do everything that the white people did. So I can remember Dad going into the restaurant and asking if it was okay, if they brought him in or whatever. And like I said, he was really superstitious. Well, the one bedroom at our house had a door where you went through the kitchen and you could go in the hall, but it had bedroom closet, double closet, but the closet door is also, the closet went into the other bedroom. Well, some of my brothers got in there and they just opened the door just a little bit. Well, he went over and of course he shut the door and he couldn't figure out how the door got open. And of course they'd open the door a little bit again. And of course he'd shut the door, you know, and he couldn't figure it all out. Of course, they got quite a kick out of that because, you know, they were sort of scaring him, and he didn't know what was going on. Then I remember one night, and this was still when we was down on 6th Street, on our way to church, Daddy had to go in Chris Brothers, and he pulled right up in front. He didn't park out the curb. He pulled right up in front of Chris Brothers there, and he left us in the car. Well, if I remember right, I think Brother Brooks started beeping the horn. So the funeral director came out. Well, Dad came out about that time. Well, Brother Brooks, I think, left his gloves on even to shake the funeral director's hands, because that's just the way they were over there, and they weren't comfortable like we were. But it was just, you know, it's just times that we had with those ministers that we had a good time. You know, we had a good time with them. Brother Barber, he pretty much every time he'd come to camp meeting, he stayed at our house. And he was really like, I mean, my dad really loved Brother Barber. He really, really, you know, really was close to Brother Barber. And I remember one time even we went, and Dad took us and went to Yellowstone and to Wyoming, and Brother Barber went with us that year. It was after camp meeting, and Brother Barber went with us and out there, and then I think he flew home from there. But, you know, it's just special times that we, you know, we enjoyed and, you know, we appreciated. And then I remember Carl and BC, and when they moved here to God's Acres from over on Channel Street, and Carl retiring from his job, and of course they spent lots and lots of hours keeping keeping God's Acres looking like it did, and trying to be so careful down through. They've all been so careful with the money, trying to make sure that they didn't use any money in a way that wasn't wisely, so the work could prosper and we could have what we have today. And then I remember Carl getting sick, and it was like August camp meeting, and of course he had cancer real bad, and he was in a lot of pain. And I know Dad was, after fall camp meeting, usually Daddy went to Oregon to Brother David's camp meeting. Sometimes he flew, sometimes he drove, but I can remember how pulled he was on whether he should really go to Oregon or whether he should wait. Well, I think Carl told him, you go ahead and go. So he went ahead and go. What Dad was out there, and Carl passed away. And I remember him coming in that night, because we got a hold of him, and he flew in. What ended up that they didn't take Carl's body until Dad got here. But I remember Dad coming in that night and saying, you know, the family chain had been broken. And, you know, you didn't know who was coming next or whatever. And we just didn't realize in less than 4 months, BC would be gone. And then Daddy died in less than 2 years. He got sick in January. And he was in a lot of pain, and was real nervous, real nervous. He spent a lot of nights for a few weeks there. He spent a lot of nights going from chair to bed to whatever, trying to just to get some relief and help with his nerves. Well, they finally ended up, they tried to go to Florida, and they started to Florida, and he started hemorrhaging. And so he told Tom to stop in Tennessee, and they stopped, and they had my mom go across, he had my mom go across the street to get some soup, but mainly to get her out of the room. And then that's when he told Tom, he said that he was hemorrhaging and he didn't want something to happen and then it'd be a problem to them. And so they called, and ended up in the hospital, and that's when they did a biopsy on his face and said that he had the cancer in his face. And that was in March. And of course, at that time, they said that he only had an opening in his throat the size of a Q-tip. And, of course, they didn't want him to come out of there and come home. They wanted him, if he was going to come home, they wanted him to be flown home. Of course, you have to have a doctor. He didn't have a doctor. And anyhow, long story short, he came home. And he was home about a month. And I remember the day that he passed away, I was over there, and I actually thought he was doing better. I mean, he seemed to be better. He was walking around. He could drink. It seemed like he was drinking better because he wasn't sort of like choking or having trouble swallowing. And I had went home with him. I remember later on the day them getting a hold of me, and this was probably 4:30. And I guess he had went into a coma is what has happened. We thought he was asleep. And I still remember Brother Craig. I said, well, put him in the chair, because you know, at least his face, his head's up, you know, where he's maybe more comfortable breathing. And I was out on the front porch with a couple of the boys, and I remember somebody coming to the door and saying, "Brother Craig, won't you?" And I went back to the bedroom, and he said, "Look right there." And I said, "He's not breathing." But Brother Craig said he had just started praying. And when he just started praying, the dad took his last breath. Would you talk about a shock? That was a shock, because we weren't prepared for it. But Mom lived, and for about probably 20, maybe around 25 years after that. And I know it was hard on her. I know, because she stayed there right with Daddy, and she was so faithful and helped in everything. I mean, she just, whatever he needed, whatever the people needed, the people was their life. The congregation was put ahead of us. I'll just tell you, if you needed something, you was going to get it faster than we were, probably, because that's just the way it was, and we knew that. So it was a whole different world for Mom after Daddy passed away, because it was like her world stopped just like that. So she had some pretty rough years. And if I have anything to say to any of you kids, is please go visit the widows and the people that have lost loved ones. Because I know from watching my mom, they sat day in and day out. And they need somebody to come visit them, just to show them that they love them and they care about them. I mean, yeah, she had us kids, but her life had been this church, and that had been her life, and it pretty well went, well, and it stopped, and it was many hard years for her. But you know what? I wouldn't trade place with nobody, because you know what? I am just so thankful that God gave me who he gave me for a mom and dad, and I appreciate the fact that my dad was what he was, because if he wouldn't have been what he was, we wouldn't all of us have what this is today, because it took faithfulness on Grandpa's part. It took faithfulness on my dad's part for us to have what's here today. I hope I didn't bore you too much.